Well, it's good to see everybody here today. I'm going to talk a little bit about something that came to me this morning. And I don't know if you have this experience, but sometimes if you wake up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, vivid thoughts about a variety of subjects. Sometimes profound insights, sometimes just a big distraction. But this morning at 3 o'clock, a profound insight occurred. And it had to do with my photography. Now, I'm not much of a photographer. I enjoy doing it, and sometimes it works out pretty good. But as of late, I found out about RAW files. And I don't know if you've ever worked with RAW files, but they're sort of fun. So it works like this. You get this digital camera, and mine's 16 megapixels, and you can set it to take a picture and have it come out as a RAW file and a JPEG, and RAW file at the same time. And then you go into your memory card and you see JPEG, RAW file of the same picture. Now, what I've come to understand about this is that there's a little engine inside your camera, and it compresses the information into a JPEG, and it makes a much smaller file. So, for instance, on my camera, a JPEG file would be 5 megabytes, and a RAW file would be close to 16 megabytes. It has that much more information from the same picture. But what the JPEG can also do is change the picture itself in its little engine. I have a Venus engine. I don't know why they call it a Venus engine, but that's what's inside my camera, this little Venus engine. And I can make the JPEG come out with more clarity, with more vibrance. I can have a very clear center and sort of a unfocused outer part. And I can do all these kind of things. And I have all these scenes. I have face scene and nature scene and picture scene and food scene. And all I got to do is just press this little thing. And the JPEG engine turns it into like the perfect picture, according to the engine. So I thought to myself, but you know, I have Photoshop Elements, which is the consumer version of Photoshop. Now, Photoshop's like $700 and takes 2 years to learn how to use. You know, and Photoshop Elements is like $50 on sale, and after a couple months, you sort of get the hang of it. And there's a way to use your Photoshop Elements to help you post-produce your RAW files. So I'm really having a lot of fun going on and taking a picture, and then I go, now what can I do with this picture? How can I be creative with it? Do I need to add more color or less? Do I need to have more shadow or more clarity? Da, da, da. And so 20, 30 minutes later, this masterpiece occurs from my RAW file. So what happened last night, this morning at 3 in the morning, was the fact that, you know what? We are all like the Venus engine. And we have this one moment, and we take this picture, and it's filtered through our egos. And our egos does the same thing that the Venus engine does. It adds and subtracts. It enhances. It does all sorts of stuff. And we get all these scenes from all the things we've learned and done. So they keep giving us, you know, the political scene. Now you push that button. And now your picture is filtered through that. Republican, Democrat, Independent. Okay. You get the male-female scene. You push that. It's filtered through that. You get the Los Angeles scene, the Koreatown scene, the Valley scene, all these little things. And it's coming through and being filtered. And at the end is this masterpiece of who we are and how we understand the world around us. Wow. Okay, so I'm using this sort of analogy of the camera and me and my ego and my Venus engine and the JPEG and the RAW. And then I look at meditation, and meditation's like processing the RAW information before it turns into the JPEG. You know, we have this like one moment of experience, and it's like 16 megabytes. And then we relate to it as 5 megabytes because it's gone through the engine. And we've compressed it and made it usable and made it us. So now we're sitting in meditation, and we have an insight. We have a momentary experience, and bang, 16 megabytes, huge. Which I think is the problem with a lot of psychedelics is it takes away the JPEG and all you have is raw information. And it's just like too much, you know? You can't make any heads or tails of it. And it takes months to process. And by the time it's fully processed, it has no meaning at all. So here we are in meditation and we're doing all this kind of stuff. And we're not really applying all the filters that we could. We're sort of like saying, okay, maybe I just let it be unfiltered for a while. Like L.A. water. You know, the filtered water and the unfiltered water? And you go, wow, okay, yeah, now. And so now you have this sort of intuitive knowing of what you've just experienced, but you can't really put it into an intellectual model. You can't turn it into the JPEG because it's far too complex and far too big. But you sort of know it. You intuitively know this stuff, and you just sort of walk around, and you intuitively know this or that and this and that. And then if you're like me, you end up at an interfaith prayer breakfast. And you've got some of your filters with you, and some of your filters you left at home. So Thursday, I was at the captain, police captain, Olympic Division, police captain's interfaith prayer breakfast. It was held down at the Episcopalian Church on Wilshire, 38th and Wilshire. And it was wonderful. And I like interfaith prayer breakfasts because, like, I'm the only non-theist there. You know, and nobody's really sure about me. You know, I think he dresses a little funny. Can we trust what he's going to say, or will he insult every known religion? You know, and so I was like there, and I was just sort of like smiling and shaking hands and just being with everybody. And the pastor of the church came up to me and said, you know, the other faiths are going to be doing chanting. How good are you at spontaneous chanting? I said, well, you know, I've got one I could do, but it's in English. She says, no, we want a foreign language. I said, but you know, I was born in Iowa. You know, English works well for me. What else do you know, she says. What else do you know? I said, well, how about the metta meditation, the metta prayer, you know, that I do at the end. And I did it for her. And she said, that's perfect. Okay, that's perfect. You can be at the end, and you can do that. So I said, okay, great. So I'm there, and nobody knows I'm going to do this. They've all planned their stuff, and now I'm going to be called up, and I'm going to do this at the end. Okay, so I get called up, and all the eyes are watching me now. You know, we've got the evangelicals there. You know, we've got the Greek Orthodox. We've got the Roman Catholics. And some non-denominationals, and then there's me. I get up there and I do the metta meditation. May all of us who have come together today in mind and heart, and I'm big, I'm filling the church. Be happy, peaceful, and free from suffering. And I go through the whole thing, and then I added something at the end, which I usually don't do, but I thought I'd make it more dramatic. You know? So at the end, I go, Shanti, 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 peace, 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 silence. Whoa, blown away. Man, the guy's good. You know? So I get down there and everybody just like shakes my hand and says, it's so wonderful. I had a tear in my eye. What is that? What, you know? And I'm thinking, well, this is the all-inclusive, we're all in this together reflection. You know, it's going to be good, and if it's not good, we're going to deal with it. And then after that, they befriended me, and I was one of them, and they were one of me, and it was wonderful, and we had breakfast, and we talked, and it was just great. Yesterday, Redondo Beach, Interfaith. I've been asked to be in a panel discussion about interfaith religion and interfaith dialogue, and we also had an interfaith amateur hour where various people from various faiths got up and did something musically. So the Hindus had the sitar and the drums and, you know, and like 20 minutes of repetition. And just, you know, we just all sort of dozing off, how wonderful it is. And then the rabbi got up and he had his guitar and was singing in like Yiddish or something, you know. And the whole group is together. And then they said, "Kusla, what can you do?" I said, "Well, I brought my harmonica today. I can do some blues." So I'm on stage, and now I got to explain why I'm going to do the blues to this interfaith group. I said, "You know, I'm a Buddhist, and we always are depressed. And, you know, and the blues just makes us feel better. So here's a little blues in the key of G." And I did a little spontaneous blues in the key of G. And, whoa, one over the group. "More, more," you know. They're yelling at me as I'm walking off the stage, you know. And that was sort of my way of introducing myself to the larger group there and coming to a place of, hey, like we're all in this together, you know? And yeah, and like I'm really different because I don't believe in God. And all you guys do. And yet you still invited me. What were you thinking? And then we had our panel discussion. And they were talking about how religion and interfaith and how we can, you know, affect the youth and how we can affect the elderly and how we can all work together and how we can make life a better life and the world a better world. And I'm going, you know, I just can't go along with this, you know, because I got to define myself as a Buddhist, you know. And we look at life as not being so good, you know, like we're born and we suffer and we die. You know, and that's sort of like what we do. And then we want to make the world a better place, but the world is flawed because of the way we experience it. The world is just the world, but we experience it as not being very comfortable and sort of against us sometimes. And we try to change a few things and realize we're not in charge and we're only part of the solution and we can't get the other part together. And so we're always sort of like, oh, it's not so good. And then I start to rant a little bit, you know, up there. Just to let them know the Buddhists are here. I said, "You know, the world's on fire. We're all going to die." And they're sort of looking at me, you know, like. And then I said, "But, you know, there's one thing we can do. We can't change the world, but we can change the suffering." Silence, nothing. Suffering? "No, we're going to change the world." "No," I said, "we can't come with you on that journey because we don't change the world. We realize it's just the way it is. But we can change the way we experience the world. If you want to find happiness, look inside, not outside. Those icons are useless. They will not make you free. They will make you a prisoner." Silence, nothing, you know. I'm going, well, you know, at least they knew I was here. And at least I was able to share with them a different perspective. A perspective that perhaps held by the secular humanists and the agnostics and the atheists and the Buddhists and all those people who say, you know, I don't know if God is going to be my refuge. I don't know if that's going to work for me because I lack something. I lack faith. You know, I lack devotion. And I need to be able to have a practical analysis of the world I live in and my relationship to it. And I need to have a foundation on this is how I should see it, this is how I could see it, and all I need to do is change a couple things. Great. Okay, so now afterwards they're all saying, "That was the best harmonica I've ever heard." Nothing about what I said, my profound words and deep insights, but you really played harmonica well. It sounded like a whole orchestra. How do you do that? Practice. I just practice. My whole life is practice. You know? So I had a great time those 2 days at the Interfaith, but I realized you really need a lot of courage to go in there because they're not going to be with you. And even if they want to be with you, they don't understand where you are. You're in a different place, you know. And you're sitting down and you're like, you know, the frog on the rock, and you're looking inside, not outside. And you have all these suttas and you have all this information, but the information is designed to make you look inside and see you already know it. You just were blocked because of the greed and the hatred and delusion that blinded you. You weren't able to interpret it correctly. The second deep insight I had was this, that as I age, I find that things are really changing rapidly. I was talking to Holly just before, and I said, you know, I don't need my glasses as much as I used to. I always wore glasses, but now I can see far away without them. And I'm going, what the heck? You know, by the time I die, I'll be 20/20. You know? And now sometimes when I'm reading, if the light is a little bit low, you know, I got to get the reading glasses because I need like a lot of light now, you know. And of course we all do anyway. And also I have found that I'm losing weight. In the last year or so, I've lost about 40 pounds, which really feels good. But it's due to eating less because you don't have an appetite and aging. Those two things combine to really give you weight loss. And it's wonderful. So I'm down to like 235. I don't have the feeling I'll be disappearing anytime soon. But 235 seems like a nice weight to have, you know. And then I'm coming into a certain reality that I thought I would never experience in my lifetime. And that is this. People think I'm homeless in a variety of situations. And it just sort of freaks you out at first. You know, and I'm thinking, why do they think I'm homeless? Well, this is my favorite hat. And, you know, it's got all these sweat stains, you know, like a tree that's been cut open. You can see the lines, and this is when it was really hot, and this is when it was medium hot. You know, so I wear that, and then I have my T-shirts that I buy in XXX, all cotton XXX for the summer. So they just sort of hang on me. You know, there's nothing form-fitting about them. And you can almost put two hands up one sleeve. And then I have my blue jeans, which are the really comfortable ones that are so big they almost fall off. And I have to cinch up my belt a little bit tighter every time just to keep them on my body. Sometimes I don't wear my socks. I just have these no socks, and I'll have these old white tennis shoes that are all stained and need to be replaced. And I'll walk into a nice restaurant. And there's an apprehension. I can feel it. They look at me, and they're wondering why I'm there. And I just want to say to them, hey, I'm here because I'm hungry. You know, that's all. I don't want to interact with anybody. I don't want to socialize. You don't even have to say any good things to me. Just give me some water and a menu, you know. So the other day I was in Santa Monica, and I got the menu, but I didn't get the water. And I was sort of in the corner. I walked in, and the first question was, where do you want to sit? I went, I don't know. I, you know, it's like Carlos Castaneda. There was a book, Teachings of Don Juan, and there was one scene in there where he's on the porch. And he asks, where should I go? Where should I sit? Well, you got to pick it out yourself, you know? And he found the spot that made him the most comfortable on the porch. So I'm in the restaurant looking for my spot. Where am I going to sit? And I go over here, and I go over there. So I'm sort of wandering for a few moments, you know, and they're watching me. Where is he going to sit? And I found it. I found the table, and I found the chair. That's the place. That's where I'm going to feel the most comfortable as I eat my meal. So I didn't get the water, but I got the menu, and then they just avoided me. It was busy. Everybody was in there, and they were all working. You could tell they had ties on. They were dressed nicely. They had conversation. And I was dressed like I was, comfortable. And then finally, I had to hold up the menu, you know. And they go, uh-huh. And then they laughed at each other, you know. And then they come over, honey, what would you like? And I'm going, honey? I would like number 24, please, combination. Oh, yeah. They brought me some chips, you know, but they never asked me if I wanted more chips. They just asked everybody else. I saw those chip bowls being refilled on occasion, but not mine. I was just there. And so I ate, and everybody just sort of like looked at me, like, he's eating. Yeah. Hungry. Got my bill. I wanted to impress her. I gave her a $5 tip. And I'm sure she said to herself, those homeless people, always trying to impress you. Yeah, I'm just kidding. You can't win. So I walk out, you know. And then the next day, I'm at a Thai restaurant. And I order pad Thai noodles with chicken. And I'm sitting there and I have my, you know, Thai iced tea and my glass of water. And they bring me not the pad Thai noodles with chicken, but the pad Thai noodles with shrimp. And they just put it on my table. Now, being a Buddhist guy and a Buddhist monk, you sort of just, it's an offering. Okay. Maybe they don't want me to have the chicken today. Maybe the shrimp was better. And they felt compelled to give me the shrimp instead, even without me asking for it. So I start to eat it. And it was good. I mean, the shrimp, chicken, you know, the noodles, the whole thing. And the waitress comes over and says, you didn't order that. You didn't order the shrimp. You ordered the chicken. But I didn't serve it to myself. They gave it to me. I just decided to eat it. And she's really upset that I'm eating the shrimp. So I don't know what they did with the chicken, but I ate the shrimp. And I said, you know what? It's all good. It's all good. And she just looked at me and shook her head, this, with the guy with the stained hat and the tennis shoes that were stained, and, you know, eating his... But I was hungry. I hadn't eaten all day. And it looked good, and I just decided to eat it. And I gave him a tip. And I'm sure they said, oh, those homeless guys always trying to impress us, you know, just giving us money left and right. So now I'm at Vons, and I'm in line. And this woman in front of me leaves to get something else. And I'm in the express lane. And I look up, and I read the word express. And I'm thinking, where is she going? She's ruining the whole rhythm of the line. And she's gone for like a really long time because Vons is really big. So I move in front of her. She had one item. I just moved it back a little bit. I put my items in front. And then I figured, well, I'll just go first. It would only be a minute longer. And then she can go after me because she left and lost her place. And I'm thinking to myself, this is perfectly logical that if someone loses their place, it's appropriate to take it. And there I am. And now she comes back. And she's in shock. And I point to the sign, Express. And she just shakes her head. The homeless guy in front of me. Doesn't he have any manners? Doesn't he know how the thing works? So I'm looking at myself in the mirror, and I'm thinking, what happened? When did I become homeless? You know? When did all the training to be part of whatever this is, when did that not become part of me? When did I start to see things differently? When did I start to process things in raw files instead of JPEGs? And why am I causing so many people so much suffering because of what I don't do, not what I do do? Why is that? So I'm struggling with that. And I realize that if I say too much, I'm scaring them, you know? If I'm saying too little, then they can apply whatever they think I am to the situation and feel more comfortable. I'm really trying to be invisible, but they won't let me. It's like I've been in the mountains and I've been working on retreat and now I come back to the city. And I'm in a different rhythm than everybody else. I haven't really had a job for 25 years. I've been at the meditation center in a room for 25 years. And now and then I go out into the world. And it's not the world I left. It's a brand new world all the time. There's never parking. I don't care where you go. There's never parking. Nobody's friendly. There's too many people and too many things to do, and they're always in a hurry. And I'm just walking around. Gosh, I got nothing to do. I feed cats. I watch the koi swim in the koi pond. I have a nice life. But it's not the same life that everybody else has. So I've really got to watch myself and be clear and say to myself before I go into any situation, you know, it may be different than you think it's supposed to be. It may be different than you want it to be. People may relate to you a little differently because of the way you look and the way you act, which is leading me to analyze my wardrobe. And maybe I need to just buy some new stuff. Maybe like a polo shirt, you know? Just to have, instead of an old T-shirt, a polo shirt, and maybe some trimmer stretch blue jeans that escauche more room and always comfortable. And maybe a pair of shoes that isn't stained and needs to be replaced, but maybe a newer pair of shoes. They might have a little fashion accent to them. So people will be impressed. And then maybe get rid of the brown hat and just have the bald head so they can see this old guy walking in, looking relatively nice in his casual clothing. And all he wants to do is just belong to the group for a few minutes while he does his business, whatever it's eating or shopping, and then let him go back to the center where he's always wanted. 5:30 in the morning, I get up. Wonderful, the sun's just coming out. I go outside, I sit by the koi pond. You know who comes over? The cats. They start to surround me. Oh, he's back. The homeless guy's back. He's just like us. We're all in this together. And I pet them and I give them a little dry food before I feed them officially with the wet food. And it's such a wonderful way to start the day. You know, the big trucks haven't started rolling through Vermont Avenue yet, and the sounds of the city coming alive are just beginning. And there's this peacefulness and calmness that just is so attractive. That the older I get, the less I want to go out and be part of that stuff. Because it's just so hard. And I know if you need to make a living, you have to do that. But I don't need to make a living anymore. You know, I get my Social Security. I have my little place where I live. And I get stipends when I give a talk. And it's all just enough to allow me not to have to go out into the world 9 to 5. To go out to the world maybe an hour or two and then retreat and back to the refuge. So I'm thinking to myself, can everybody have that refuge? And yes, I think it's possible, but it's an internal refuge. It's the one that you find inside, not outside. I just happen to find both at the same time. I just found one that's outside in the midst of all this chaos and then the one that's inside, which allows me to always find that place, but be misunderstood if I'm in that place and I'm not responding or reacting to the situation with fear and anxiety, and I'm interpreting it as mind states arising, existing, and passing away, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, processing it in a different way. And yet, there I am, and I need to make people feel comfortable, so I play the harmonica. And they go, wow, that is so cool. Oh, I do a loving kindness meditation. They go, ooh, that's so nice. I can relate to you on that. The other stuff, not so much, but I understand what that is. So I need to go and find these little bits and pieces that people can relate to and feel comfortable with when I'm out in the world. And then when I'm in my little world at IBMC, the cats know exactly where I'm coming from. The fish are happy that I'm there. And the other people that live there, some like it, some don't. I just go, okay, what can I do? So that's where I'm at now, at the tender age of 68. I've had two invitations to go, one to San Francisco to do a one-day retreat at Against the Stream up there. The manager of Against the Stream called me, said, we've heard some good things about you down in L.A., and would you like to come up and give us a one-day? I said, no, thanks, but, you know, I got, like, a lot of stuff to do. My plate is full, you know. I'm doing all this interface stuff, and damn it. And then the next day, I got something from New York. We'd like to have you come up here for a week. We're going to schedule you to be talking at all these different places, and you can have a one-day retreat, and da-da-da-da. No, thanks, but, you know, If I never have to get on a plane again, it'll be too soon. I don't want to fly any place. I don't want to go any place. They got really good people in New York who can do what I do, you know, and they don't need me there, that's for sure. And I don't want to miss my naps. I get that 2 o'clock nap, you know, permanent reservation, you know. And man, I just, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes, and the day starts again. It's wonderful. I don't, when you're on the road doing all that kind of stuff, there is no rest. They all want as much as they can from you the short time that you're there. And you're more than happy to give, but then you get depleted, you know, and there's just, you just sort of got nothing to say and no place to go, and you just want to go, you know, nap, and you can't. And so I figured, you know, the podcast, the YouTube channel, the website, the Facebook, that's enough. I don't need to put myself out there in any more forms, you know. It's cool. And I'll just keep doing that. And the Facebook's getting better and better. Everybody likes my Facebook. You know, I just love to do that. The picture, which I'm now doing a lot of them myself, the raw file, you know, Photoshop elements, creativity, masterpiece, and then to find the quote and connect those. And some of those quotes out there are just so darn profound. I don't know how these people come up with it. Really, why, like Plato, how did he find all that stuff? You know, and then talk about it. And we can still read it today. That's how good it is. Most of the stuff that's coming out today, I don't know if it's going to last a couple thousand years. Probably not. So having a really good time, but understanding that I need to sort of like pull back a little bit more, and then sort of like work on me, you know, and reflect on being the homeless guy, and reflect on being the, you know, the Dharma teacher or the cat caretaker or all the other roles that I have, and just get really good at that. So I am definitely blessed with having a non-traditional lifestyle, being challenged and seeing my own limitations so clearly and realizing they are preventing me from being free, which I talked about last time, because freedom is all a state of mind. It has nothing to do with the body. And can I be free in my chaos? And I think it's possible.